Welcome everyone to the V Book Club podcast. This is a podcast by the makers of V Magazine and V Speaks podcast. And I'm here today with a good friend, Madison Shirley, who is the vice president of Jim Shirley Restaurants here in Santa Rosa Beach, Florida. And she's also a storytelling extraordinaire, writer, thespian, just all around creative person. So we're excited to have you today.
Oh, just keep flattering. It's great. No, thanks so much, Jordan. I'm really excited to be here today.
Yeah. So I know that, we've met multiple times about storytelling in general and playing different role-playing games and doing Emerald Coast Storytellers together. And I wanted to have you on today just to talk about the art of storytelling and how it is in literally everything that we do and just sort of the importance of that as people and why you think that it's just a really cool like way to connect as humans.
Yeah, no, I mean, when you brought this topic to me just a couple days ago, I was like, oh my gosh, my head started spinning of all the opportunities and topics that we could dive into because like you said, literally every facet of life has some variation of storytelling involved in it. And that storytelling in of itself is just innately ingrained in the genetic code of our society, like from all the way back to, you know, they talk about being in the caves and the fireplaces and all the things, all the way up to our oral storytelling from more recently to, you know, the fantasy novels and the movies and radio that you hear and podcasts, like all these different iterations of storytelling are just continuously cycling around us. And it's something as humans that we just need always in our lives. And it's something that I, when I approach things in regards to food and the restaurants and all the spaces that we're creating, it's always trying to gear it around that thought of what story are we telling people and what is it that they're going to bring back and what is it they're going to add to it. And it's just, you know, a constant communication and that something I'm really excited and always love to talk about. So,
When did you think you first realized like this was something that you love to do? Because I know, you know, everyone I think starts off as a storyteller when you're a kid, you know, you get excited about things, but few of us continue to do it later in into our careers.
Yeah, I don't know if there was ever one specific point for it. I think that there was a sheer amount of chaos that led to always having just constant narratives that I was making up, whether it was for, you know, writing stories as a little child or telling stories when I was doing theater and telling other people's stories or recording it, working with like some news stations that I worked with in when I was in college and then continuing to expand to different types of stories, whether they were nonfiction or fantasy or sci-fi and making things and going with it, that storytelling is always fascinated me. But I think that the point that really tied it into the industry that I'm at right now was when I had the opportunity to study abroad in Italy. Okay. And while I was there, had, of course, you know, copious amounts of food because that's what you do when you're Italy, as you do. But what really tied me to so interested in the concepts and the integral storytelling of how the Italians approach food and their culture is that every single person that whether it was a nano or, you know, a shop owner or the random kid selling pastries on the street, that they all had a story for what they, where the recipe came from, where the, you know, flour was made, what the process was, where the bakery was. And it all told an innate, connected, interlocking tale of their whole culture in a way. Yeah. And that was just so fascinating to me because you could see the microcosm of their own lives and then expanded out across all of Florence and then expanded out across all of Tuscany and then expanded out across all of Italy. And it became this pride that they all connected within. And it was all a shared storyline. Through their food. And that was a clicking moment for me. And then from everything from that point on, whether it was working in, you know, the craft beer and cider industry, working with wine, working in the restaurants that I am now, my goal was always to continue to tell the story of the product from beginning to end, mm-hmm. because that's what people wanted to hear. And that's what, I mean, that's what I wanted to hear. So I assumed that other people wanted to hear it because, you know, I know what everyone wants. No, I'm just kidding.
But being in that industry and the marketing and just, you know, what connects with people and what is sort of those standout points to any type of food or any type of business. How do you feel like, you know, going from Italy and hearing those stories, but then you worked really heavily in the craft beer industry on sort of the West Coast. So how do those compare?
I mean,
drastic. Surprisingly the same or surprisingly different?
I mean, like tomatoes to apples, like that's pretty much kind of, I know that was a bad joke, but.
Food analogy, it know, works.
It goes. But what I would say within it is that America as a whole has definitely a more bisected food culture, as we know. Just like in any world, in any part of the world, that all the geographic regions seem to have their own style to an extent. Some of those are starting to blur together and get a little bit more blended. But at the same time, they're fairly separate. What is really interesting about the way that the West Coast found, that I found, really approached food and how they appreciate food and how they want to hear about food was they want that, or at least while I was working there, I'm sure that it's very similar to it still, that they really thrived off of that feeling that they were part of a greater product and process, so that in making a purchase that they knew that it was going directly to, of course, to the cidery or the brewery that we were working with, but then they also knew they wanted to know the whole step along the way as well, to know where the apples came from, where the hops came from, exactly what type they were. They wanted everything down to, like, what was the molecular breakdown of the soil that they were grown in, to the extent where you're like, I now know way too much about growing apples.
Driving the truck that day?
Yeah, exactly. It was like, whose hand was that taking the picture with the pick and, like, picking the apple? They almost wanted an exhaustive story. Because there's not as much of a unified story at this moment. I feel like they're still trying to develop and figure out what is outside of, you know, salmon and kale and healthy, lovely things. Like, what is it that defines West Coast food specifically? But at the same time, everyone, what they really wanted was to feel connected through the food and the product that they were purchasing, and that they wanted to feel part of something. And that was the story that I told was, hey, we were your neighborhood cidery, whether you lived in our neighborhood or across the state or in another state, we were. And that you could come and sample our products and that they would be just as good for you as much as the person, you know, two states over, and we'll tell you the whole story because we're proud of it. And I love that. Being able to be transparent in your whole process is fantastic.
Yeah. How do you feel like that relates now that you're running 7-ish different restaurants and you're telling not only an individual story for each one of those, but also sort of an overarching story for the brand?
Yeah, so I think that what's so interesting about it is, like, shifting the gears with it, where, like, it's less about the individual product. And, of course, we have the messaging behind each of the different dishes and the intention that we put behind each of them and the story that's behind each of them. But really what the goal now is this, like, greater concept of hospitality and that welcoming people into our home, because what we find is that every bite and every experience is really telling them a story about us and what we want to share with them. And we can be as transparent as we want. We can be as homey as we want. We can be as fresh and locally grown as we want. But what they interpret from every bite is the real experience there. And that's something that I really take to heart on it, because every experience in our restaurant, every bite and every thought process is just geared towards developing a story that actually actively and transparently shares with our customers how much we love our food and how much we love our community also, because mm-hmm. we, you know, work really hard to source locally, local products, the best products we can. We also take great pride in the intention that we take to cook them, because sometimes it's like, you know, the actual preparation can be work, can be so much more work than the actual cooking of the dish.
Right.
And so the hours and hours of labor that go to making that one perfect little dish that's put right uh-huh. in front of you, all of that work is this combined effort and story about our passion and our love. And mm-hmm. it's not, and not just the Shirley family is mm-hmm. evil either. The 300-400 people that work every single day in our restaurants to execute on the highest caliber that they possibly can, and mm-hmm. sharing their passions, their loves, and putting all of that into the dish. Because, I mean, we've all been there. We've all been to a restaurant where, right. you know, you take a bite and you're like, ooh, there is not love in this dish. There is something going on. But we gear and work really hard to try to inspire our people to share the same story that we want to, and all transpose it through the art of food instead. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that art, the art of the food and the mm-hmm. hospitality goes right back to those families you met in Italy, those yeah. people you know in the West Coast, mm-hmm. and every, you know, sort of especially Southern home where mm-hmm. people would gather around the table and your grandmother's cooking for you or whoever, you know, and that's what we know and that's how we grew up. And that is such another unique, like, human story that we're all sort of creating together when you sit around that table and then you sit there and you tell stories about what's happened or what happened 10 years ago or the same one that you've heard over and over, but it's still good the 100th time, or it's a groaner, but, you know, either way. So I think that it all just ties back together no matter what it is. And obviously we, you know, we make magazines and books and do marketing here, so we are telling stories constantly as well. But how do we take that marketing mind and also work on creative storytelling projects? So tell us a little bit about sort of some of your more creative writing or storytelling endeavors.
Yeah, so many of those will probably never see the light of day just because. But one of my secret deep passions is definitely Shakespearean theater. I had the absolute pleasure of being able to work for a short time with a group in Oregon of good friends of mine that all were thespians, mm-hmm. and we did, and they still continue to do charity theater that would be put on at different wineries and different events, and all the proceeds would go to a nonprofit that we uh-huh. would be working for, or working with, rather, during the time. And during that process, I really learned so much from one of my very good friends, Rachel Kohler, who is just genius in regards to Shakespearean literature. Like, okay. truly, she's out of this mm-hmm. world. But she taught me so much about just rhyme, rhythm, the beats, the way that people interact, and the way that what I may have interpreted as stilted language in Shakespearean uh-huh. writing was actually this very fluid poetry that was intended to be spoken in a very specific and literate way, and imposed like so much passion and story into these very simplistic lines mm-hmm. that, you know, when you read them, you're like, da 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 da.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh no, you actually are having a fluid conversation uh-huh. throughout the whole process. And how do you get to that point? And I loved that. That was something that I then began kind of messing with and experimenting with and really diving into more long form poetry. Mm-hmm. And so I have a few, you know, longer poems that, again, probably won't see the light of day anytime soon. But it became also something that I was able to utilize as a tool to kind of share my own personal experiences, mm-hmm. good, bad, the ugly, and hopefully share to others what I was experiencing in the world and hope that they were able to relate to that as well in mm-hmm. that continuous shared storytelling goal. And whether it was, you know, I've had a few pieces that, you know, tackled mental health and making it known how my experience was, and that hoping that others would be able to relate to it. And I've got amazing feedback mm-hmm. from that. I have a few pieces that were on the cultural variety of food and what that means to me personally, okay. as well as to my family, and how it's evolved from, you know, my great grandmother's cast iron skillet to mm-hmm. my dad teaching me how to make, you know, stuffed quail and things like that, and had the variety and the passion and where you see it. And those also received some really great response as well. And I was really excited about that. So that's mm-hmm. kind of my like secret back.
Yeah.
Like I did.
No,
that
I didn't know about the Shakespeare experience that you had. So that, but it makes sense because I've heard you read a couple of those poems out loud and I know you and how you speak. So yeah, I'm like, okay, that tracks.
Yeah. I give, like I said, I give Rachel Kohler a lot of credit for my pronunciation. Uh-huh. I am much better. Well, I am much better. I am much better at speaking now that I've worked with her a few times. So, mm-hmm. but yeah. But no, I think so that, and then, you know, I like to pretend that I'm a novelist, or I'll do short stories. Never quite get them finished, but I get a lot of things on paper.
And don't we all?
Someday that'll all come together.
It will for both of us. We're doing that. Yeah, it's going to happen.
Right, exactly. Someday it'll happen. We'll be like, you know what? This is the time we'll make this happen. Mm-hmm. But that, and then on the side as well, one of the things that I love to use as an outlet externally is I really love tabletop role-playing games, mm-hmm. so like Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
I love Monster of the Week. There's a bunch of different styles and iterations, and I'm pretty open to all mm-hmm. of them. But I found that is, while exceptionally nerdy, a really amazing outlet for, one, being able to develop empathy and develop personalization and awareness into the world, because you are creating another story mm-hmm. of and walking in someone else's story that you have created basically out of nothing.
Right.
And it becomes this really interesting overlapping experience of, you know, creative dynamicness, responsiveness, improv, but also mm-hmm. like critical thinking as it's happening, mm-hmm. because obviously most of the situations are super impractical. Like you're never going to just wander into a dungeon full of dragons, mm-hmm. and sometimes you do in the game, but in real life, no. But how do you handle that when that's put forward in your character?
Sometimes you don't want to think critically and you just want to barrel into it.
Oh, believe me.
Do the dumbest thing possible just because it's fun.
That has happened many a time, and I don't think the rest of my party appreciates it when it happens.
Yeah.
But
well,
sometimes
I've also probably been that party member a couple times myself. So
sometimes it's just classic and you sheer chaos. And sometimes chaos is the best.
Yeah.
So
well, I know like we've played a few tabletop-ish role-playing games before together, and it's always really fun. You're an amazing DM because of that, I think it's that theater background coming out in you and you just have fun with it. But I do think that those are like also such a great way to create a story as you go. And like you said, like improv, and because you never know what's going to happen next, or you never know what the character like player next to you is going to do. And you're just like, okay, well, maybe we'll sing a song about it. That's me. Or we're going to go fight this dragon. So I don't know. It's like, I feel like they're having a comeback.
Yes. No, completely. No, yeah. And I think that's such an interesting thing that I love seeing the rise recently of Dungeons and Dragons over the past decade. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, of course, everyone remembers when they were younger and it wasn't cool and you were the nerd. But it's like so many people are so engaged in it and interested in it. And I think it's that, again, that oral storytelling and experience that they're able to share together mm-hmm. that has really begun to be an acceptable thing in our society again. Mm-hmm. It's not like there was definitely an era and a time in which thinking creatively or differently or this or that was not always, you know, seen as the most positive, and especially within storytellers. Mm-hmm. And that we're seeing this rise over the past 10, 15 years of people diving into not just Dungeons and Dragons, but all these other developing tabletop roleplay games, as well as, you know, fantasy books that are on the rise. Like, there are record sales happening right now, and that there's also, you know, every movie, it seems, has some epic fantasy attached to it. And then, but I mean, you even just look at the nostalgia films or movies or books that are being created. You know, we've got Ring of Power that just recently released a few years ago, and they've got another season coming out.
Yes.
And that just shows the nostalgia desire for something like Lord of the Rings, that high fantasy. And and it all ties kind of back together, where it's people are desiring and thriving off of connection, and connections found in storytelling. And how do you get to know somebody?
Right. Well, I mean, how did we become friends? Oh, we both are huge nerds and love Lord of the Rings and fantasy books and Star Wars and all of that. So that's how I've connected with probably most of my best friends at this point. And like, there's something really special about that when you're sharing those stories and you're like, oh, you love that thing? I didn't know that. Well, I love that thing too. And just being a nerd in a way. And I mean, anyone, I think personally, anyone could be a nerd about anything. Like, it's not just fantasy or movies or whatever. Like, you can be a nerd about cars, or you can be a nerd about anything. So that's just how you meet your people and make friends. But I want to go back to Lord of the Rings for a second.
Of course.
Because
always.
We're both big fans. And just the whole process behind, I mean, that's definitely one of the most popular, if not the most popular fantasy series of all time. But when it was written, Tolkien wasn't thinking about it as a fantasy series. He was thinking about it as a history of basically England that had lost much of its history in the Norman invasion. And just like, he was like, I want to bring back these legends and this history and create that for my people to connect with them. So it's like, and then we're still doing that today.
Completely. And it's so, and it's so fascinating because it's not just him. There's so many authors from that time period in England as well that were doing that same thing. I mean, you look at C.S. Lewis had the Chronicles of Narnia. They did not get along, the two of them. Yep. Tolkien and Lewis, they were not friends. They had two very different ways of approaching that history that they were creating.
Yeah.
But with Tolkien in particular, what is so intrinsically interesting is, you know, he has got, I mean, those books are a slog, you know, you've got to love them. And, but everyone loves
them. They can be hard to get
through. They can be, especially if you get to the Silmarillion. That's, when you get to it, you're committed. But at the same time, what they tell is such thoughtfully produced narratives and storylines, and so many of them that all interweave and connect so beautifully. And that, yeah, you read it and you're like, maybe this was England's past. Maybe, like, especially when you hear that story of his goal and his intention of recreating the Anglo-Saxon mythos that was lost so many years ago. And similar with like the Celtics, and there's so many cultures that, you know, when the Franks came through, then when the Romans came through, and then all these people that came through, that it was lost, but then slowly rebuilt over time. And it's really thoughtfully produced. And I mean, that seems like such an understatement. And so, and I know out there some Tolkien fan is like, has written some amazing dissertation that could explain everything everyone know I love Tolkien so much, but I won't pretend to be the expert on them.
No, me either.
But yeah, I mean, it's, but also that with it is like this explanation of that high fantasy, that why does this exist? Why does the world exist as it is?
Yeah.
And how can we shape it and how do we create it and how does it evolve? And it's, and that, you know, whether it was truly mythos or not, and it kind of is now where it's like, hey, he created out of nothing this world that so many people believe in now, whether it's, you know, actively or they engage with it, that isn't that like almost a form of magic and storytelling in of itself?
Absolutely. And I think that that's like part of the reason that people write fantasy is that escapism and, or maybe, you know, it wasn't escapism for him. It was a way to reconnect with the past. But now other people are writing it so that they can connect other people to their world, whatever is in their mind. And I just want to say, like, I think that fantasy is also having a big moment just in general. Definitely. With a lot of new series that are taking off hugely right now. So, and I wonder, like, what it is going, like, if something is going on in the world that's making people gravitate more towards those stories. Or if there's just more of it being produced, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that is, it's always the, you know, chicken before the egg situation of it. But it's like, I feel like there is such a desire for escapism at the moment to an extent that fantasy allows you to access, but also is all, and I when you look at kind of like trends of popularity of things, they all, books rise and fall, and the genres rise and fall really based off of what the people need in their stories at the moment. And what I feel like I see a lot of right now is, you know, a lot of stories that are, you know, that high fantasy escapism, but also that allow you to recreate the world around you so that you're able to see it in a slightly different fashion, or allow you to be creative and dynamic in a different way with the way that you're interpreting the literature itself. So I guess maybe that's how I took it.
Yeah. Like, how so? Can you give me an example?
I mean, like, for instance, I think it's really interesting where, so I've been, you know, caught back into the ACOTAR series, of course, because that's just a, you know, cycle that I will never be able to break at this point. I'll just keep rereading.
A Court of Thorns and Roses for those who don't understand the acronym.
Thank you. But one of the things that I was thinking about as I was reading through it was that, you know, that's such a great example of high fantasy in the modern setting, where, of course, there is this heavy romance factor, which is what makes it like, ooh, mystique and exciting. And that's why, like, got so spicy and exciting for all the people. And probably one of the good reasons why it sold very well, because there's this high desire for passion and excitement and thrillingness and romance. But what I thought was really interesting as I started to peel it back a little bit more was that the way that she builds that book up is, you know, you have it where you have humanity and then you have the fae, and they are separated and divided, and humanity is kind of trapped in this conceptual normal world, and then the fae have this just absolutely amazing, magical, fantastical, as you would expect, it's a high fantasy like world. But then as you're walking through it and talking and like reading more about the world that she's built, I'm like, you know what? This does sound like magic and this does sound like fantasy, but these are all things that we as humans have actually built now or done now.
And absolutely.
It's, which is wild to think about, where you're reading and you're like, this is magic. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I've seen a building like that. I've seen something like that. Oh, we do something. It's kind of like helped restructure my positive view on how humanity kind of has creatively and dynamically shaped itself, and obviously ACOTAR itself probably didn't inspire directly those, but like just the concept of high fantasy is such a beautiful thing in that we as humans are creating a concept out of nothing, but then, and creating a story out of nothing, but then we can actually go and literally
create that crazy building that was in that book that we read about one time and make a version of it.
Completely. Yeah. I mean, like, I was thinking about it. You guys recently had a post that was about a shop that, or a restaurant that was all storytelling.
Oh, yeah. Fable.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, one, now I need to go there. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, you do. It was awesome. It looked, so we're going to go.
Absolutely. I'm down for that. But in watching it, I was like I loved that they could take, that, you know, somebody thought through to write the story, but then someone also saw the inspiration. They took the thing and then they made the food and they mm-hmm. made the space to feel this inspiration. And isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Like, that's wild. Like, that's basically magic right there. Like,
it was.
Like, literally, there was a spell and then there's food. Boom. Yeah. Like, there's a few people in between. But, you know, mm-hmm. like, I think that's so interesting. And going back to your question of, like, why high fantasy has this, or why fantasy as a general is having this rise, and it kind of curtails with the Dungeons and Dragons and the TTRPGs, mm-hmm. where it's that people are desiring an innermost connection with each other, and they want to tell those stories, and they want to share those stories,
yeah.
and they want to create the stories, mm-hmm. and they want to be inspired, and that they're looking for this and craving it. And you know, for all of its shortcomings, and lots of shortcomings, the pandemic helped sure. a lot of that too, where it pushed people to recognize what the importance that we crave and desire among our neighbors and our community, and it's the stories we share with each other, mm-hmm. and that the those emotional and intimate moments that you can have, and I don't mean intimate in like the spicy way. I mean like the like truly emotional yeah. ways that you can tie in. I mean, you know, I had like, this is sounds wild, like so silly to someone that doesn't play Dungeons and Dragons, but for many years I played with this one character with a group of friends, Nellie Nuggetway. She was a little halfling, very small little character.
Uh-huh.
She was just a big goof to start for like most of it, but we played for years, and this character developed and developed and developed over time,
mm-hmm.
without me even realizing it,
yeah.
until it got to the point where she died, and that it felt as if my character
mm-hmm.
was a part of me that mm-hmm. I had somehow imbued into this being, and it helped me work through so many things that were going on in my life at the time without me realizing
it. Absolutely.
And then also helped me bond closer with the people that I worked with, which luckily happened to be my coworkers too. Mm-hmm. So we worked really well together because we were always doing these challenges and complicated puzzles, and it became very good like skill building opportunities. But at the end of it, it was I had imparted so much of myself
mm-hmm.
into this character that when she was gone, it was like, oh, like I grieved, like reality. And so I think there's a lot of that people want to see themselves in other things. Mm-hmm. They want to see themselves thrive and grow. And they also want to see other people's stories and what could be, should be, would be, and that, you know, and that fantasy has an opportunity mm-hmm. to give you that, but and then some,
like, yeah.
and then you also get elves and all the other things. That are
well, yeah,
fun,
and that's so. Always really fun. And I think any kind of storytelling can really do mm-hmm. that, because it can create that connection and it can make people see that they are not alone in whatever they're feeling. You know, a poem can do that, nonfiction can do that, fiction can do that, fantasy can do that, and so can, like you said, any, like, you know, role-playing or any kind of writing. And, I don't know, as a writer myself who writes fiction constantly, even though, like, may never go anywhere, the characters that get created all do have a little piece of me in them. And then when they'll do certain things, I'm like, well, why would they do that? And then I'm like, oh, okay, mm-hmm. like, oh, no, that's something that maybe I wouldn't do, but there's a reason that I thought of that, or that mm-hmm. that had them do that or process something in a certain way. And you're like, oh, okay. It kind of helps you see yourself. But then when others read it, it helps them see themselves too. And I think that's so important in any kind of writing. And it all goes right back to someone seeing a post on Facebook about pasta at Farm and Fire and be like, oh, I had an experience one time at a farm and, you know, somewhere, and I want to go try that pasta now. Like, so yeah, it's just like all comes full circle.
No, completely. And also, I need to emphasize, I've read some of the pieces that Jordan's done, and they are fantastic, whether she'll show them to the public or not. They are fantastic.
And they'll all get pieced together into a more cohesive thing.
It'll be amazing at that point. But yeah, no, I think that that's like a great example. Farm Fire is a great example because it's such a little eccentric space in of itself where the theme of it, I mean, someone walks in, I heard it the other day, they were just like, well, that's eclectic. There's a lot of things happening here. And I'm like, yeah, that's what we like. Right. Because just what we took away from that and in building that menu was very much the inspiration of what we had seen at all these different places, whether it's, I know we put that in our tagline where it's like, you know, it could be, we are inspired by the pubs of England, tapas bars of Spain, izakayas of Japan, like all these places, but they're all unique and different, and they each tell a different experiential story. But the food itself also has unique traits, and that in kind of bringing those plates and those stories to you, saying, hey, we want to share this with you. We had this experience, but it's not good enough for us just to have sat there and ate it. It's like, we want to bring that to our home. We want to bring that to our people. Yeah. We want our community, our neighbors, our greater Walton County to have, and everyone that comes and we have the privilege of visiting us to come, sit down, enjoy a meal, and see all of the travels that, you know, I mean, my dad's been all over the world. Feels like, you know, there and back again. He has had his own he has been there and done his own Odyssey, Lord of the Rings style many a time, it feels like. But it's like, and then I have only just brushed the surface. And then now, you know, like, but it's so interesting to be able to bring those experiences and hopefully share that with every single person that comes through the door.
Well, you know, hobbits only mature when they're 30, so we're just getting started.
Yeah, exactly. All right. I'm thinking more closer to 35 at this point. Yeah, yeah. All right, go with
probably
it.
So. That's good. That's good. And then, you know, I know you guys do a lot of events and things, especially at Farm and Fire, too, like you do Star Wars Day. And so it all just ties back in together, and everyone should definitely go check out Farm and Fire, but also all Jim Shirley restaurants. And they're just, you know, start like telling your own story. Go share that experience with your friends. So
absolutely. And I would love to hear all of them. Please feel free to reach out to any of our social accounts and let us know your story. We would love to share them. We've got the Great Southern Cafe, which I know is imbued with stories. Like its walls just whisper to me all the amazing experiences people have had, from engagements to birthdays to every which way, like so many, almost two decades of stories being built. I'm pretty sure it's just held up by stories at this point.
Yeah.
But
the building itself is a story, and so are the others. So.
Exactly. And then within Seaside, we've also got, of course, BFF, you know, our amazing little frozen drink spot. C-Bar and 87 Central, kind of our newer spots that I'm so excited about and how it's developing and that opportunity that's there. It's kind of building its own story in that same way where, like, we kind of put a character together and now it's, like, just keeps organically growing. Yeah. And every week I'm like, oh, that's something new. I love that. And then, of course, you've got the Meltdown, which, I mean, just classic Seaside. You know, they are the Meltdown has been part of our lives for so long. They make good grilled cheese. Oh my gosh.
So like, one of those came across my feed earlier and I was like, ooh.
Yeah, just some good drippy grilled cheese. Like honestly, on a hot, it sounds crazy, but on a hot summer day, weirdly, grilled cheese is the perfect thing to have, especially when you're going back onto the beach and it's just fun and casual and
easy
relaxing
to take with you.
Exactly. And again, another place that is just imbued with positive stories and times and all the things of you gotta have your grilled cheese. And that is just what that beautiful little Airstream has been able to put out and create. Yeah. And then, of course, we've got the Bay. South Walden has so many, you know, beautiful romantic stories that are attached to it with its overlooking views. And we just added a beautiful back deck that's overhung with all of these old oaks and Spanish moss. It's very classic, like Panhandle and Farm and Fire. North Beach Social, which is just where people go to have a great time. Good mm-hmm. times, great vibes.
Yeah. All the things. All the good music.
And all the good yes. music and great food and all mm-hmm. that. I'm a little biased. I love all of our places. They're all amazing. But really, if people have stories, I'd love to hear them. It brings me and my family a lot of joy mm-hmm. as we continue to tell our story and share it with everybody.
Yeah. Well, yeah. you bring me a lot of joy as my friend, and right your back. Restaurants bring us a lot of joy as people who get to live here and dine at them. So thank you so much. And thanks for being here on our podcast today.
Thanks so much, Jordan. It was amazing.
Right. Thanks, everyone. See you next time.